we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Spike protein into humans by genetic engineering. The two researchers who got the Nobel Prize actually said in an interview, well, we came up with this idea 15 years ago. So when you look back 15 years ago, it was clear that the spike protein is a bioweapon against the brain, particularly the part of the brain which we call our mental immune system, which is the very, very important part that makes us human. You know, which allows us to think, which allows us to be curious, which allows us, to explore the world and develop a culture, everything. So the spike protein essentially attacks humankind, the very basis of humans. Of course, at that time, the spike protein was kind of, not very dangerous because it was an external inflammation outside the brain, which, of course, is transmitted to the brain, it's known.
And that is Dr. Michael Nels, NEHLS, out of Germany, speaking to Tucker Carlson on his podcast last week, The Tucker Carlson Encounter, about his book, The Indoctrinated Brain. It was one of the most spellbinding interviews I've heard in the last 4 years, because what Dr. Nels has been writing about for a long time, he is a doctor, but he is a neuropathologist, it sounds like, in large degree, but he practices, so I don't know how they have it organized over there in Germany, but the point is, it is a fascinating interview. And when I watched it, I actually watched it a couple of times. It struck me, I had to kind of repent in a way, because all these doctors and scientists and the public at large, actually, who were blinded by what has gone on the last 4 years, Dr. Nels, in his book, explains that they can't help it because of what was the target, in large measure, of the spike protein, both from the infection, but even worse, from the shots. And it was fascinating. It gives me a great deal of sympathy toward those who cannot see the truth about all this. And I think that's a great segue into Jordan, your and Pierre Corey's interview recently with Cheryl Atkinson.
Yeah, for the most part, I think this is another good example of the kind of blindness that is affecting our medical community. And I think that's what me and Pierre talk a good bit about. We also talk about, in a sense, how difficult it is to help a lot of these people that are suffering from the consequences of COVID or the spike protein. And the fact that many of them are extremely young, healthy, and vibrant before they are devastated by this pathogen.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be it's a wonderful interview y'all give, and I think it'd be worthwhile for us to play it now and see. We'll come back for the third segment, but let's play that now.
Okay.
The first voice that you'll hear is that of Dr. Corey.
Yeah, I mean, I hate starting out with negativity, but I believe, it's my belief, that the medical system has essentially failed. It's collapsed. It does not serve the patient. It serves numerous interests. Generally, they're financial. And I think it's a model where it really benefits from patients staying ill and being chronically ill. It doesn't focus on health. And like I said, it doesn't put the patient first. And I think that accelerated in COVID, and that's why I'm saying it's literally failed now. And I think that the failure of that system has been exposed to many, many people. And so what we're trying to do as an organization, I mean, we originally started out trying to solve COVID, and we did. And we're still working on one of the after effects of COVID, which is long COVID and long vax. But we're now addressing other areas, cancer care. There's numerous therapies for cancer that we're trying to disseminate. basically, we're trying to put out good guidance that's free of conflicts of interest. It's very hard to get that anywhere else. I mean, the medical journals and the published literature is all, unfortunately, it's basically not only corrupted, but it's curated. You're only presented a certain amount of scientific information, and much of it is censored and ignored. And we're trying to fight back against that. And we're trying to create a home for people to come to where they can get just honest medicine, good guidance on things that are that the system is really not addressing. And many of these are chronic illnesses. And like I said, a lot of it is related to COVID and these vaccines. We're dealing with a humanitarian catastrophe of disability and disease from the vaccines. And no one's I do not see evidence of that system responding appropriately to something that afflicts millions of Americans now.
You can see why, because it's been explained, the medical system might be conflicted or corrupted and not be addressing these things. But can you explain in short form why you think the government, our public health officials at the top, must see the same things that the general public seeing, the statistics of excess deaths and all kinds of chronic illnesses, but they aren't addressing these in any big public way that I can see? Why would that be?
In some ways, I think from inside the system, it's hard to see what the dysfunction is. I mean, you almost, even in the long COVID and vaccine injured world, they just assume that our governments are actually spending the money wisely, going down the right pathways and coming up with answers. And if one thing's already kind of proven that, I mean, we spent probably $1.2 to $1.4 billion on trying to figure out what is long COVID, not even mentioning the word vaccine. But the outcome was basically not enrolling a trial at all, not trying anything, and basically coming out with data that just proves that they still have a problem and really don't know what it is.
What do you think?
The financial interests of, let's just use the pharmaceutical industry, is so entrenched in the system that all of those officials and agencies, I mean, it is federal regulatory capture. It's been going on for decades. And it can address those things if it's not in the interest of the pharmaceutical industry. It's not in the interest of the pharmaceutical industry to openly admit and expose that they've unleashed what I'm calling a humanitarian catastrophe. They will never do that. And even those agency officials and those committees that know how bad this stuff is, if they vote no or try to speak out, they're gone. We've shown that example after example. My career ended for trying to tell the truth. My colleagues' careers ended. I'm spending a lot of my time defending doctors who spoke out with good science, the truth about all of these things that they did in COVID. Their careers are ended. So that control and that inability to resist serving their interests, that's one reason. And the second reason is, unfortunately, because of the way that system is designed, the people who rise to the top, they rise largely because they're willing. They're the most willing and the most deferential to serving those interests. You do not rise in those agencies. In fact, the point is, the more you work for pharma, the better you're going to do, because you get to the top, and then what happens? It's the revolving door. You know that very well, Cheryl. I mean, they all just want to get to the top, serve pharma, and then they get their golden parachutes. They get VP board positions on these pharmaceutical companies, and then they do that for a while, and then they go back. I mean, it's just complete regulatory capture, and patients are suffering as a result of this. They're not working for the patients.
I think there are at least two groups of people. There's one group of people in America that sees chronic illnesses, the impact of the long-lasting impacts that are still emerging of COVID and COVID vaccination. And then there are people who don't see it. They may see individual illnesses that are occurring that they see as random events that may indeed in many instances be random events, but they're not putting two and two together in the same way. What would you tell them, Dr. Vaughn, is the state of America's health? What is happening for people who may not see patterns or what's going on?
Well, I think one thing that you have to realize is, I think that one of the things I always think about the physicians that are probably in the places that aren't seeing it is that they don't have the lens to understand that there's a pathogen, spike protein itself, causing all of these multi-systems issues. And if you don't ever have that lens, instead, you're going to basically kind of jump over yourself to try to find a way to explain these multi-systems issues that really aren't explainable previously in our textbooks, in a sense. And it's just going to be frustrating. And so, in a lot of times, eventually you come to the conclusion that this person is just, you know, making this up, in a sense. And I think that's what most of the doctors have, you know, in a sense, they need to be saying, we don't know what's wrong with you. But a lot of times they say, there's nothing wrong with you. And I think what they really should be saying is, we don't know. And the patients, in a sense, get gaslit because of that, because in a sense, they're all of a sudden re-entering saying, what is wrong with me? No one's helping me. Is it in my, you know, is it in my head? Is it an issue that is something else related to, you know, non-medical? And the reality is if you don't have that lens, you're really not going to be able to help anybody. So that's the problem. And how to get there is really exposing the pathology. I mean, I think that's one thing I think people are getting a little bit better at understanding is that this damage is, I mean, there's no system I think that it can't affect. And I think that's what's, you know, and Pierre and me would say it's humbling disease. It's unlike anything we've ever seen. And how to treat it is ever changing in some ways and ever, you know, discovering new ways to do it.
What would you say is happening to people?
Well, I'm going to go back. When I talk about the agencies and the capture, their biggest weapon are the medical journals. Those are completely controlled by the pharmaceutical industry. And so when you ask why doctors can't recognize the spike protein as a pathogen, why they can't diagnose vaccine injuries, is because they're literally being lied to and misinformed, right? They're constantly being surrounded by propaganda raining on them through medical journals, which they are still overly trusting. 3 years ago, I thought what appeared in the New England Journal of Medicine was the best science and best scientists. I have a very different opinion now. And doctors don't know that. They believe what they're trained and they're not being educated. And so they think that everything's hunky-dory. They think they're doing the best they can. They think they're using the best science and the best therapies. They have no idea of the censorship. Censorship is silent. And so as long as they keep trusting and not asking questions, they're going to go on practicing in a very misinformed way, and that's not going to serve patients well. But the journals, I have to tell you, is the foundation of everything. Because if it appears in those journals, then it becomes scientific truth. And we still have an entire system of doctors who literally believe the vaccines are safe, that you should get more vaccines, and that the vaccines don't cause injuries. They're not aware of the explosion in cancers, the new development of turbo cancers. I mean, for those of us who have been studying this with a objective, transparent eye, looking at the totality of the evidence, knowing that you can't trust the peer-reviewed literature, what you find is a very different picture. And I think that picture is not being shown. Like Jordan said, the lens through which they're looking at things, they think they're seeing everything, and they're seeing only a tiny slice of the reality that we see.
Describe what you see happening to people. What is happening to patients?
So in many ways, I mean, it is very young people that were otherwise athletic and living their life in basically every way you would think a fit, you know, 20 to 40 year old would do. And then they go from that to being debilitated. So where literally even doing things like walking upstairs, concentrating for long times, participating in any kind of conversation work is stressful, overwhelming, and actually leaves them, in a sense, unable to even participate the next day. That's what we would call post-exertional malaise, brain fog, all these kind of things. And then on top of that, as Pierre said, I mean, the kind of increase in the type of cancer diagnosis that I even have in my, you know, primary care practice to neurological diseases that I never thought would happen, to things like systemic amyloidosis that I would have never, you know, seen in some of these patients or may have seen in once in a lifetime. You start to see them more on a, you know, a quarterly basis, which kind of blows you away. So something's happening. And when you talk to most other physicians, they agree. I mean, your typical electrophysiologist who handles the basically circuitry of the heart will tell you they're overwhelmed with young people with new cardiac electrical issues. And it's, again, sometimes you just have to ask yourself, and I wish physicians would do this instead of kind of stay in their little lane and siloed, is I wonder what's going on.
Dr. Corey, what are you saying?
Yeah. So what I want to differentiate vaccine. I kind of differentiate vaccine injury and vaccine syndrome. The vaccine syndrome is a chronic illness. The vaccines we know can cause a lot of acute issues. So heart attacks, myocarditis, strokes, anaphylaxis, various rashes, things like that. But what Jordan and I specialize in is what we call long vax. Same thing as long COVID. Only real difference is long vax is on average sicker than long COVID. Yeah. I also will say the long vax is far more prevalent. So in my practice, where we've evaluated over 1,200 patients, 70% were long vax. It was triggered by the vaccine, temporally associated. And although we give it this new name, long COVID, long vax, it's not a new disease. It's an old disease that was called myalgic encephalitis / chronic fatigue syndrome, or MECFS. And that disease has been around for decades, always associated with infections. Typically, the most common is mononucleosis or Epstein-Barr. Giardia has also been associated with it. But with SARS-CoV-2, the incidence of MECFS, or what we call long COVID, is so high. And the vaccines use the spike protein, which is the main pathogen on the virus. And that's exploded ME-CFS. And when you look at 6 months out, the amount of patients who are still disabled, it's very, very high. So we have a huge practice. And the triad, the pillar, diagnostic pillar, and Jordan kind of rattled them off. But if you look at old papers describing the syndrome, it's three things. One, a new debilitating fatigue. Two, post-exertional malaise, where if they do exert themselves, and the limits of exertion can be very small, like going to the mailbox, they get racked with fatigue or flares of their other symptoms. And then the third pillar is what we call brain fog, but it's some cognitive deficit, short-term memory, inability to focus, concentrate, sometimes disorientation and confusion. And so we see and patients get disabled. And something Jordan and I talk about all the time is, the level of health from which they fall is shocking. We see these patients who ate well, exercise well, thriving in their career. They have young families. And now they're literally, you know, their family turns into caregivers.
Yeah.
They used to be head of households running things. And not only are they suffering with acute symptoms, but psychologically, they don't know what their prognosis is, if they'll ever get better. And I'll tell you, the prognosis of ME-CFS from decades of study, only 5% ever reach back to their former baseline. Now, I want to be more positive with this disease because there is a lot of basics. We know the pathogen. We know the spike. We're learning much more of the pathophysiology. Jordan's contributions to understanding a section of that, especially around the microclotting and the hemologic abnormalities, is huge because it gives us therapeutics that are really affected. So we're learning more about how to treat that disease because in the past, they didn't really understand. There's very little research on the pathophysiology of that disease. And I think old ME-CFS sufferers are going to really benefit from what we're learning because there's a lot of us who are now really focused doing research and trialing therapeutics. So I hope that the prognosis, that historic prognosis, becomes very much more positive as we go forward.
Are you worried about spike proteins? Get the spike formula developed by experts like Dr. Peter McCullough from The Wellness Company by going to twc.health. America Out Loud listeners use discount OUTLOUD at checkout.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutLoud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Trouble concentrating or recalling information is frustrating, embarrassing, and kills productivity. Nutrition company Healthy Cell created Focus and Recall to boost your brain power. And unlike other supplements that don't work, Focus and Recall is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed ingredients to help you immediately sharpen focus and strengthen recall. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order, risk-free. Love it or your money back, guaranteed. HealthyCell.com, code Out Loud.
Dr. Baum, what are you learning, if you can describe it in layman's terms, is helping some patients? And maybe it's different depending on the patient, but in general.
So a lot of what I do is look at the kind of coagulation abnormalities that go on with just the spike protein, exposure to the spike protein. So that could be COVID or the vaccine itself, especially the mRNA vaccines. And because of those clotting abnormalities and what we call endothelial damage, so inside the vessel getting damage. Again, your vessels are kind of the lifeline for oxygen to all your tissues. Your tissues don't work well if you don't have oxygenation to them, especially dense oxygen delivery, like red blood cells, the big things that we always talk about, the red things that basically get oxygen out to your tissues. And so what I use is a lot of things that help break down and get rid of this abnormal clotting cascade that happens in COVID and also assist in their ability to break it down as well. And we call it that fibrinolysis. Pierre uses some similar stuff, but also he, we kind of address it in the same way. And a lot of the things that we're using, even things like ivermectin, have these mechanisms of action that we're discovering that involve fibrinogen or mm-hmm. the clotting cascade or the inflammatory. And actually, again, I kind of go back to the word thromboinflammation. I think those are going to be the words for the next 10 years. It's one word, but it proves that thrombosis, so kind of clotting or blocking of vessels, and inflammation cannot be separated. And uniquely, they can be basically elicited or blown up, especially by the spike protein.
What are you finding in terms of treatment in simple terms?
Yeah. So, Jordan focused. So there's multiple mechanisms that are caused. In fact, Jordan and I sometimes argue or debate, which is the chicken or the egg, meaning, which is promoting, is it thrombosis promoting inflammation? And I think both things are true. It's a vicious cycle. But the other mechanisms, there's autoimmunity, this macrophage activation. I don't want to get too sciencey, but there are other pathophysiologic mechanisms, and I try to address those as well. I've learned a lot from Jordan on how to approach the hematologic or the clotting factors, but I also work on addressing other causes of inflammation. Certainly, mast cell activation is a huge part, and that's also linked to thrombotic.
What is mast cell?
Mast cell. So mast cell is an immune cell that mediates allergic reactions. So it releases a lot of histamine, right? So whenever you see someone, break out in hives, those are mast cells that are releasing a lot of histamine, redness, itching, swelling. But that's a huge release of histamine. In mast cell activation, you kind of have a lower level. So patients are not presenting with classic allergic symptoms. And what's fascinating, if you look at descriptions of mast cell activation syndrome before COVID, it literally is like a complete overlap of long COVID.
Yeah.
And there's all these subtle, odd, little weird symptoms like dysautonomia, which is lack of control of like heart rate and blood pressure and temperature regulation, fatigue, brain fog, GI disturbances. It can cause any number of ones, but it's low level. And so when you seek to either block the histamine receptors or suppress the activity of mast cells, you see some tremendous benefits. So that, he talked about clotting, mast cells, autoimmunity, macrophages is another immune cell that gets triggered. And so we have a whole bunch of different therapies which address those mechanisms. What's interesting is we don't have good tests to tell us which is the mechanism which is most predominant. Sometimes if I'll address one mechanism, I can hit a home run with a patient. Like sometimes one medicine, boom, they're like, oh my God, I feel better. The vast majority, it's more iterative. I go after this one, this one. This is just my approach. And I'll find like iterative improvements. Like some symptoms will disappear when I address mast cells, others when I address anticoagulation, others when I address sort of macrophage activation. And so it's kind of like sometimes I feel like I'm putting Humpty Dumpty together, a little bit, like by addressing all of these
dysregulations. These prescription drugs you all are using or supplements?
Some of them are. Some of them are. A lot of things are actually the supplements as well. So a lot of the things are in nature actually work pretty well at these things. So even things like mast cell activation, there are things like quercetin and those kind of things that work very well. They're natural, things that are available to begin with. The other thing is, I think Pierre will agree to this, getting a visit with a patient initially, as we were just talking about the varying part of the syndrome or part of the symptoms, it takes a lot of time. Okay. And so again, the system is not set up for you to actually listen to everything that's going on, because it's literally, it affects every system, and it takes a long time to sit there and balance where you're going to focus, because usually they're all related in some ways, but you attack the thing that seems to be the most prominent first, and then from there kind of adjust to the other things.
Yeah. This may be the most unique time in our lifetime in terms of learning about something novel and new medically in one big ball. Mm-hmm. It's happened so fast. What is it that you're looking at right now? What are you learning today that you didn't know 3 months ago? Like, where is this going in your opinion?
Well, first, I would say there's a paper published by a guy named Peter Parry, who you may know. He was very active against bringing out the fraud around SSRIs. He wrote a paper on spikeopathy with a whole big group. It's got 275 references. And it really goes over all of the mechanisms that we know. And I think it's really the foundation of what we need is a new field, which is spikeopathy. We need to learn much more about that. What I'm doing, so I'm not a basic science researcher. I'm a clinician. And I'm upfront with patients. I'm trying to learn how best to help them using various therapeutic mechanisms. And one of the challenges I have is, as my network of collaborators, including Jordan, grow, Jordan, it's not a day that goes by where somebody says, oh, have you tried this? Have you tried this? Yeah. And the list of things that people tell me works and is effective, I mean, it's 100 different compounds long. And I can't practice medicine with 100 compounds. And so as I go on in time, I kind of will discard, de-emphasize certain therapies when I find others that work better. I'm learning about lots of different mechanistic therapies that work in various ways. A lot of them are multi-mechanistic. Like, for instance, ivermectin, which is one of our mainstays, has about 20 positive mechanisms of action. But there's lots of other therapies which have similar. And so really, I am just doing old good gumshoe medicine, really just figuring out how best to help my patients in a safe way, in an effective and sustained way. And that's just me trial and erroring. And I have to tell you, the clinical trials research response of our medical system has been appalling. And as of today, we just updated our guideline. I think of the many things that we recommend, I would say it's only 5 of maybe 25 therapies that we think that are actually supported by a clinical trial. And we need much more clinical trials. And they're not doing them. They have 1.2 billion committed. And as of yet, this is what I heard from 2 months ago on a review article, is that they have 1.2 billion committed. Only 4 clinical trials have been set up. Only one is ready to enroll. And they haven't enrolled a patient yet. And you know what they're studying in that first trial? Paxlovid, which is an absolute absurdity.
Paxlovid is
the antiviral that Pfizer has a patent on that they rolled out and said that is a treatment for acute COVID. It's an antiviral. It would have almost no relevance to long COVID or long vax. And it's absurd that would be the first thing. It's equally absurd and unsurprising. You would agree. I mean, of course, what are they going to choose to study? They're going to choose to study something that would reap huge profits if it was shown to be effective. And I will tell you right now, if there's a positive trial for Paxlovid in long COVID, I will tell you that's an absolute fraud before even seeing it. I would not trust that for a second.
And I would kind of, you know, additionally add, to treat this doesn't necessarily mean we need a new molecule. And I think a lot of people misunderstand that, you know, something that's an antibiotic or something that's an anti-inflammatory, they're just actually molecules that act on cells. Okay. That's what a medicine is, or even a supplement. But just because it's been labeled this way doesn't limit its ability to do many other things. In fact, a lot of those things end up typically called side effects. But in this one, we're talking about repurposing drugs and finding drugs that work. It doesn't always mean that we need a brand new molecule to help people. And I think that's what is kind of the frustration with this, is there's a lot of these things that have shown observational data. I mean, that they work. But I mean, again, who are you going to pay to do a full randomized controlled trial on these, you know, agents that are pennies on the dollar? Yeah.
Cutting edge for you. What is sort of, are you on the precipice of learning the next new thing about your patients, or where are you in that?
Yeah. So when we talk about mast cell activation syndrome, it kind of goes along with what I'm finding in a lot of these people. And even last time we were talking, two of the patients actually that were the runners started to kind of have me look even further into something called venous disease. And venous disease, venous compressions, what damage is being done to the veins. In medicine, we have not really looked at the veins that much. In fact, most people assume that veins that are issues in your legs are just cosmetic in nature. But what I've learned is the veins are actually, first of all, hold 70% of your blood volume. But on top of that, when they don't work, it may not rush you to the hospital that day, but it could easily make your life quite miserable. And so in that case, a lot of what I'm seeing is addressing these people with venous disease and actually helping them get back to where they can walk upstairs and even back to running in college, those kind of things. And those things have been almost what I would call game changers. When you actually, the cool thing about medicine is we have this kind of this issue going on with tons of symptoms, and you've got 50 doctors, you're going to get 50 diagnoses. But there's a guy that wrote a book, Lawrence Afrin, that's called Don't Bet Against Occam, which is basically a fancy way of saying, if there's a good way to explain all the symptoms with one or two issues, it's more likely those one or two issues than it is the 15.
I've expressed this before. I'm concerned about one thing. I want to get your thoughts on this. You see obvious cases in healthy, formerly healthy people who clearly know something's wrong with them, and maybe they're not getting answers from their doctors. Logic would lead me to ask the question, aren't there a lot more marginal people who weren't that healthy to begin with, who are likewise being impacted but brushing it off because they expect, since they're not that healthy, to have brain fog or another heart attack, or they're tired going up the stairs? What's to be done about all those people that may not even know how to seek help in the right place?
If the system does not recognize and educate, including the media and newspapers, to the lay people population, what this syndrome is, how common it is related to the vaccines. I agree with you. I think there's many people out there who have probably milder forms, not as sick as the ones that we see, and don't know what it's caused. And they have these random symptoms. They go to the doctors. They're not getting answers. And I think there's a lot of suffering out there. And you know, the other aspect is that I work outside the system. I don't take insurance. I can't take insurance. They would never cover any of the things that I'm doing anyway. And the burdens of working under insurance are too immense. And so we do pro bono, but it's very hard to deliver this kind of care at an affordable price. So for the first time in my career, I'm actually seeing people largely that can afford to get the care that they need. There's millions that can't afford it. And I'm working with nonprofits who are now trying to raise money, because the other problem is many of the vaccine injured, they actually had money before, but now they're unemployed. There's no income. They're falling back on assistance from their families. And so to get them the proper care, and like Jordan mentioned before, the amount of effort that we put in for these patients, the consultations routinely last more than an hour. The follow-up, their complexity and their symptom burden are so high, I keep hiring nurses. And so I'm just going to say, I don't make a lot of money doing this kind of care, because the amount of inputs that we have to do to deliver what we think is optimal care is really large. These are really burdensome patients, in terms of they need a lot of resources to address their needs.
Well, so even if other doctors do get read up and understand this, who's going to want to do this?
Nobody. Well, one thing I will point out, and this is even in my, kind of a personal case, is that in a sense, when I started to kind of describe what I was seeing and actually having a lot of conversations with Risha Pretorius and Doug Kell, who were teaching me how to look at clotting issues, I was talking to my father, who's a physician. And it was funny that as I was talking, I think my mom was listening in the other room, and my mom walks in and says, I think I have some of those symptoms. She's my mother. I should have recognized, some of this, but she's like, I just felt slower, and as she described it, I was like, yes, you're right, mom. And in a sense, it kind of proved to me how even obvious it might be, even in someone you love, as they, especially older, I'm not going to say how old she is, but she's older than me. You just kind of rationalize it that, oh, they're just getting older. But when you actually kind of line it up with either a vaccination or infection, and then there's that decline, keep it in your armamentarium to think that it might be related. Because as you do a lot of therapies, these people, I've had a lot of people over the age of 70, even over the age of 80, got a couple of patients that are in their 90s, that doing the things that we're doing, keep them out of the assisted living home. Yeah. They start thinking correctly again. I mean, a lot of them are brilliant people that all of a sudden have a pretty rapid decline that is pretty well chronologically related to either an infection or a vaccine. And then, so just keep your hat on and look for that, because those people, instead of just saying you're just getting old, can't think, you can actually get them back to driving, doing taxes. I mean, the things that these 70 and 80 year olds do.
That's some of the more satisfying. It's also as challenging as it is, it can be very satisfying, because you really can surprise people by making them better in ways that they didn't think was possible. But to your question, I've given lectures and talks, and I've had people come up to me after. They're like, I think I have that. And they've turned into my patients. They've come sought to me for care. And when I take their history, for sure, everything that I was lecturing, describing, they experienced and were suffering from. And they didn't know. They didn't know until they hear me describe what the illness is.
That leads me to one of my last two questions. If theoretically millions of people have this or are going to have this at some point, some form of illness from COVID or COVID vaccine that's longstanding, where can they go for help? You guys can't treat all of them. And they may be hearing this and thinking, I have some of that. Where can they go and get help today?
Yeah, I would say to start, I would go to my nonprofit website, which is flccc.net. We have a protocol there. It's not a protocol. It's really a guideline of recommended therapies. Some of them are trial supported. Others are just much more clinical experience and mechanistic. But many of them are not prescription. And I've had many patients come to me who are still sick, but they tell me that they've done other things that have helped them significantly before coming to me. So there are things and some guidance around safe nutraceuticals and other interventions that you could do. So that would be a minimum. So I don't want people to think that they have no help for them. I think that there's a start there. And then further, there's directory of, we don't curate or really control that directory, but you know, doctors who follow us, supporters of us who follow our guidelines, there are doctors using those protocols, and that list is on our website. And I think that's a start. Jordan, do you have any other guidance?
I mean, the other thing is, I would say it is the time, in a sense, that especially these patients or their loved ones need to take a little bit of matters into their own hand, get the information, and find a physician that at least cares about that patient. Because at least you probably the heartstrings of a physician that took a Hippocratic oath that cares about people is willing to at least try a lot of time. So that's one of the things I always say is, and I have patients that will say that no, my doctor in town, as long as you're helping him guide him, he is fine with doing it.
Yeah, I've had patients who bring our protocols to the doctor just to start the conversation, and the good doctors will look into it. They'll start reading it. I mean, we have highly referenced summaries of this disease. We probably have 400 references to support our descriptions and our guidance. And so the good doctors, they can start with that guide. And by the way, even if they haven't treated vaccine injury syndrome, I never had before I started. See, we all have to start somewhere. I don't think there's a number, the requisite amount of experts and specialty practices that have really good experience. We're not at high numbers yet, but we all should be starting somewhere. But you're right. Well, the first thing is it has to be recognized what this disease is and to think about some, you know, first and simple methods to try to treat it.
And then
you've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Clean. Pure, with premium ingredients. Global Healing's Pure Plant Protein offers 20 grams of protein per scoop, and it's a perfect way to maintain and build lean muscle while indulging yourself. It combines enzymes and probiotics to maximize nutrient absorption, improving digestion and your gut health. Available in vanilla and chocolate flavors, elevate your protein consumption while supporting your overall wellness with Pure Plant Protein. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Expert opinions, honest debate, and in-depth investigations are what you've come to expect from AmericaOutloud.news. We don't shy away from speaking the truth boldly and plainly. All that's missing is the propaganda that has infected legacy and social media. Get the best of down and dirty, wholesome American speak. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Go a day without brushing your teeth or washing your hands? What about washing your nose? I mean, your nose does filter the air you breathe, air loaded with bacteria, viruses, and irritants. Make nasal hygiene part of your routine with Clear. No messy bottles to fill, no drowning sensation. Clear is a natural drug-free saline with the added benefit of xylitol, which blocks bacterial and viral adhesion. Available in stores and online at clear.com. That is XLEAR.com.
Welcome back to America Out Loud Pulse. I'm Dr. Stuart Tankersley. Thank you for joining us on iHeartRadio as well. The last segment today, we're going to review one of the most important discussions that has occurred over the last 4 years. It is last week's interview by Tucker Carlson of a Dr. Michael Nels of Germany. He has written a best-selling book that has now been translated into English. and it is The Indoctrinated Brain. It is a fascinating interview. I would encourage anyone to listen to. It's about 49 minutes long, and Dr. Nell's book reveals it's a fascinating. He was a well-read, well-received author of previous books in Germany, but this is his breakout book internationally. And he goes through he's a physician and he's a geneticist. He is a brilliant guy who looks at what has gone on in the American brain. And in a way, it looks at that it joins our thinking to our spirit realm in a different way that I never perceived. But he's not saying that they're the same. But the point is, it's an interesting way of looking at how the brain operates, and how the brain operates reveals a lot about the character of the person, and more importantly, regarding COVID, the culture. And he goes through, I want to play the first segment, it's just a couple of minutes long, and he explains how the inflammation that is caused by the shots, more so than the infection itself, how it affected our brain's immune cells. And when our immunity, neurological immunity, is impacted, especially in a part of the brain called the hippocampus, it leads to long-term problems if it's not corrected, like Alzheimer's. So I'm going to start with this segment where he is discussing the neuroinflammation because the immune system has been injured.
Then our mental immune system breaks down and we are free for everything. I mean, we can be conquered and we would even accept it. And so I was working on this mental immune system and
you're describing a physical,
it's physical.
Exactly. It's physical. This is not emotional. This is not the product of propaganda. You're saying the way that your brain functions as a physical matter can be changed to make you more controllable.
Emotions essentially change the way the brain works, and strong emotions, fear, for example, particularly in a situation where your mental immune system is down, meaning that your psychological resilience is down, leads to a very strong effect in the brain, kind of a neurotoxic effect, leakage of molecules out of the neurons, which are recognized by immune cells in the brain. And this recognition leads to an activation of an immune response, very strong immune response, activating cytokines, pro-inflammatory cytokines, and they attack the hippocampus, our autobiographical memory center, shutting down essentially many, many functions, like, for example, curiosity, like, for example, psychological resilience drops, meaning that everything that happens leads to an increased rate of depression. And it shuts down, which I've shown recently and which I put in my book, it shuts down our ability to think.
Yes, indeed. That is one of the most important, humbling statements that I've had to accept. The first 2 years of this epic tragedy that we're still stuck in, I was very angry at my contemporaries, at my cohorts, the other scientists and doctors who were doing such damage. The evidence was abundant. But in understanding what Dr. Nels is telling us, we need to understand that these doctors and our neighbors in general, they are stuck. Their brain is incapable because of the damage done to it. And this seems fantastical, except for the evidence that he quotes in this interview and in his book that I cannot wait to get and read. But it's fascinating. And then the next part, the next clip I want to play for you, Tucker gets right to the heart of it, I think.
Why after the mRNA vax was shown not to stop transmission, did governments continue to push it on their populations?
Absolutely. They pushed it even on unborn children, you know, and they, yes, you know, women were pregnant, young children. So I, these are all different pieces of a puzzle I couldn't understand. And only when I realized it's not about health, it's not about not even money, it's about conquering the human mind.
Conquering the human mind.
And all the two pieces of the puzzle fell together seamless, and I had a picture in front of me which clearly showed what they are up to. And that is really to undermine the human ability to think, and it's even worse than that. It's even worse than that which I show in the book, because we need this production of these new nerve cells not only for curiosity, psychological resilience, or our ability to think. They are also necessary for memorizing and retrieving new memories. So if you shut down this production and force the hippocampus to memorize all these different stories, these fear-mongering narratives, then these narratives will enter the brain. They will be memorized in the hippocampus, but for a cost, they will override pre-existing memories. There's no other way around it, because you have no production of new nerve cells allowing new memories form without harming previous ones. So what happens is you override with the narratives, with the fear narratives, with the technocratic narratives, you override your pre-existing memories, your individuality, or your personality, and change it.
If intentional, this would be the most evil thing ever done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When I wrote the book, my wife actually is the person who first reads it and corrects it. And she almost got a heart attack doing that. I mean, she had really problems reading chapter by chapter because the evil that the book reveals is traumatic.
That's what we have been screaming about for 4 years. The evil is so easy to see. If you have the eyes to see and ears to hear, if you don't, it's time to repent. There's no other way of explaining. He's talking about the evil. They didn't just go after the elderly. They didn't just go after the people living now. They went after future generations. Last May of last year, we published in Association of American Physicians and Surgeons the evidence that these shots, how injurious they are to developing babies and to the mothers. It is unequivocal. We know several of the mechanisms by which this is happening. I'm sure we'll learn more later. But this is a level of evil. And then the infertility rates in men that these this spike protein in these shots also cause, it's unparalleled damage and destruction. And the whole discussion is very insightful. Of course, it was intriguing from a scientific point of view, but it's instructive to those of us who have the eyes to see and ears to hear to give us pause to accept the reality that these people are trapped, and in so doing, they've trapped all of us. But the good news is, and he talks about this in his last chapter, he talks about the hope that is for us, that is waiting on us. If we do some things and move in the right direction, we can overcome a lot of this damage and destruction. And he goes through the intentional, like he talked about there, the intentionality of what these sociopaths, he calls them the sociopaths that have done this to us, and how they organized this and intentionally sought to destroy our memory and cause this Alzheimer's type effect, mass Alzheimer's type of effect through fear. It was an operation, a military operation, a psyops, if you will, like never experienced before. And the way he explained it in Tucker was brilliant in his questioning and summarizing. The way he explained it was, if you are in a very heated moment, if you're in a crisis, for example, and by the way, in his book, he lists the 100 crises, perpetual crises, that the WHO has planned for us. And this is all, these people have told us that their hubris is epic. But anyways, the perpetual crisis that puts people into fear and keeps them in fear replaces their memory capacity. And so it forces a very, very difficult time for people to ground themselves, to reevaluate, to stop and reevaluate what has gone on. And the fundamental neurophysical effect, going back to the original point, is how these nerve cells are not regenerated because of the inflammation, the shots, the spike protein, the fatty particles in which they were packaged in the shots. All of these things potentiate this. And on top of that, you look at the measures taken by the governments, lock you away, don't even let you go to the beach or the park, getting outside. All these things are very important for many reasons for our psychological health. And then not getting outside, vitamin D, he mentions vitamin D, omega-3, lithium. It was fascinating with his description of how lithium, very, very small amounts of lithium, are so healthy for the immune system in the brain. Very, very interesting. And so at the very last, he talks about the last chapter of his book. And I'm going to play these 3 minutes or so for you.
I think seeing and describing your book, the big picture of what's actually going on, all these different threads are part of one thing. Has it changed your view about people or changed your view of the spiritual world? I mean, this is so evil that, and you said it's not about money exclusively, and it's not about elections. It's much bigger. I mean, how has that changed you?
Well, in the last chapter, which is a chapter of hope, where I show we can change that, we can empower ourselves again. Because you have to understand, we talk a lot everywhere about how it happened, what happened, how it happened, how it was instrumentalized, all the different steps, all the evil things. But we need to know why it happened. And when we know why, then we know the target. And we know the target, in this case, the hippocampus, we know how to change things. But so the last chapter is about that. But in the last chapter, I also discuss with myself why it actually happened in the first place. What are these people? And I found a couple of books about the and papers, publications, peer-reviewed, that if you are empowered, if you, the more power you have, something develops, which we call acquired sociopathy. And maybe that's behind that, that people have kind of a god-like, you know, self-esteem.
Yes.
And really believe that they do the right thing in their worldview, you know. And they might think that we have to eradicate humankind to save humankind, whatever. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what these people think. It's more important what the reader is thinking, what we all are thinking, because we are the majority. And at the moment, about 20%, I guess, or maybe even 25 to 30% of the people worldwide realized, they already, 20% realized it very early, 25 to 30% realized it meanwhile, in total, I guess, what's going on. And what I argue is if each one of them makes it possible to convince somebody else about what's going on, then we are 50 to 60%. We are a majority again. And as I alluded to already, the people who are not really clear what's going on and don't want to know what's going on, they still follow the mass. And if the mass is 50 to 60%, people who can think, if we can convince them that there's another majority somewhere else, majority of people who want to, yeah, a humane future for our children, then we all will prevail, 100% sure.
Last question. You live in a country, product of society, that's impressive, but is conformist.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. So how are you treated in Germany?
And, of course, he talks about how the intelligence agencies have smeared him on Wikipedia and the like. But that last hopeful point that we've been alluding to, and reminds me of what happened when Brett Weinstein was interviewed a couple back in January, and he was asked about the Goliath being so massive, the medical industrial complex, the militaries, the intelligence agencies, the trusted news initiative, you know, the mass media, the establishment, if you will, media, that have been so corrupted to the core. Brett Weinstein was asked, what does he think the chances we have against such a Goliath are? And he said, I won't say we're going to win, but I like our odds because we know how to think and we have courage. And that's what's required of humanity. If we're going to succeed in against these truly maniacal, evil entities that are destroying billions of lives, not just with this messenger RNA technology COVID shot garbage, but with the suppression of truth and the whittling down of our humanity so that we will ultimately want to be subservient to them, there's hope. There's hope against their insanity, and that is courage, conviction, craving of truth, like Thessalonians talks about. We crave the truth that is before us, and that's the hope we have. And with that, thank you for joining us once again on America Out Loud Pulse. I'm Dr. Stuart Tankersley and Dr. Jordan Vaughn. Join us again next week. Thank you again.